On the frozen world of Lumi, life is possible only where the blazing quartz thaws the ice. Here, where the dark of night lasts the whole winter long, there is work to be done. Even in darkness, merchants are needed to carry goods and travelers between the capital city Highreach and the smaller outlying towns. A clever merchant always journeys with some of the intelligent animals of Lumi. With the aid of these animal companions and by the light of lanterns, there is money to be made from selling goods and prestige from difficult deliveries. Whoever wants victory as a merchant must seek both. Welcome, Curious Caravans, to Die Alone, a solo RPG and board game podcast. I'm Chris, and this is episode 13. Welcome back to Die Alone, everyone. I'm Chris, and this week we're going to be talking about Merchants of the Dark Road, a kind of pickup and delivery, worker placement, rondel, merchant caravan game from Elf Creek Games. But first, let's do a little State of the Dungeon. I'm not backing much on Kickstarter this particular week, partially just because it's sort of that, like, post Zine Quests period where there's not a lot of stuff live, but my Attack from Space game is live on Kickstarter right now and it's doing pretty well, and I've been spending a lot of time just kind of pushing that, working on a couple of new projects for Gallant Knight Games and a couple of top secret things I can't talk about right now. I'm also starting to develop a new expansion for 3D6 that I'm quite excited about, that's going to be a solo-themed hive crawl, and so I think that'll be really fun. But for the most part, I've just been playing games when I have a moment. Right now I have Sword and Sorcery something Immortal Alliances or something on the table, and it is rated as being one of the best solo, like, dungeon crawl style games, and I haven't gotten further than reading the rules and getting things out on the table. I read everywhere that the rules are super dense on it, and I'm not debating that, but it's also more just that there's a lot of them. They all seem pretty logical, and it looks like they'll make sense once I really get into the game, but right now I'm feeling very overwhelmed by just the starting process of it. I'm like, there's like 6 books and 94 different tokens, and I haven't quite gotten to the point that I'm actually playing the game. And twice I've gone to sit down to play it and been like, I have to refresh the rules before I can start playing. Maybe I'll go read one of my new RPGs. But I am looking forward to playing it. It looks really cool, and I've heard amazing things about it. I also have Notorious out on the Die Alone table that is going to be my second or third game that I've played of it, and I'm loving this solo bounty hunter RPG so far, and that'll be in an upcoming episode. But this week we're talking about Merchants of the Dark Road, which is a game from Elf Creek Games, and in it you play a merchant, and you've got a cute little wagon and a cute little animal of some sort that's tugging your wagon through this world of darkness and frozen ice. And right off the bat, I will say that this is a game whose world and art and graphic design appeals to me a lot more than the actual gameplay. But that's not me saying that it's a bad game by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's a very well-designed game, and I think it's a fun game for the type of game it is. It's just not necessarily my type of game. I really tend towards games that have more of the thematic and the story element at the front, and this is very much a mechanics and turn sequence type of game that just isn't really necessarily my thing, particularly when you're talking solo. I actually think this game would be a lot more fun if I was playing with people. It does have a solo mode. It has an entire separate book for solo adventures. It even has like a sort of thematic adventure mode that has different things you're doing. And I do appreciate that. I kind of think the solo mode might have been developed by Matt Paquette, who does some of the other solo stuff that I really like. It does definitely feel like this is a game that was developed for multiplayer and then has solo mode as almost a stretch goal type add-on, because it's a different book. It's a different touch to how the game is played as well. But in Merchants of the Dark Road, you have your little wagon that you are taking around, and you are trading and purchasing goods to put in your wagon, and they use sort of a Tetris-y block type thing where each of the different goods are a different size, and you can only fit so much in your wagon based off of the size and the shape of the different goods. And once it's full, you have to find ways to sell or offload or deliver the products that you're carrying. The wagon board is actually really nicely designed. I like that it has spots for everything. This is 100% one of those games where I wish I'd gone all in on the super deluxe version of it. Even now, after having played the game and thinking that the game's probably not so much for me, I still kind of wish I had, because the deluxe version had like little sculpted lanterns, and the player board is a double layered board that has little cutouts for the different places that the dice slot in. The coins in particular, which are beautifully designed, they have a like a art deco-y look to them. They have different sizes and shapes for the different denominations. They did these in an enameled metal coin, and they're absolutely gorgeous looking. Like, I'm kicking myself for not getting those, just so that I could use them with virtually any fantasy game I wanted to use coins or tokens with, because they're beautiful. But you kind of use your player board as a guide to what you're doing each turn. There's slots where the heroes that you can pick up at the tavern go. There are slots where you can put your commissions, which are the different items that a certain town are looking for, onto the side of it. So it's a nicely designed little player board. I like that everything has its place and everything sort of slots into it or to the sides of it in a way that is visually appealing. That's absolutely the strength of this game without question. Andrew Bosley did all the artwork for this, and I'm pretty sure Andrew's the artist on like Everdell and a few of those other games that are very loved for not just the art style, but the graphic design and how it complements the art style. And overall, this game has like design moxie in spades. The characters are all sort of cartoony, but very thematic. This thing has this like consistent palette across the board that is just absolutely lovely. It's got these dark, like deep night blues, and everything feels cold and sort of eerie and strange. It's got this big board that you put together with the little puzzle pieces. That's the town of Lumi, I think it's what the name of the town is. And then there's like a second section where you are going down and into the depths of the forested outreaches of the area, and it's beautiful looking. The dice are lovely. They're all engraved dice, and there's like six different kinds, and there's like day and night dice that you roll depending on whether you have illuminated dice or just regular ones. The shop Rondell uses these beautiful carved fat dice that have the different colors and stuff on them. The exploration die that you roll when you do the different ruins has, well, it kind of looks like the guy from the Breakfast Club in that freeze frame, but it has just really nice iconography on it, and everything is beautiful looking. The voyage, the travel cards that you pull out when you pick which way you're traveling when you leave the town to go sell your goods or drop off heroes at the outskirt towns. There's all original artwork on those as well. And it's both the plus and negative to this game that everything is so graphically beautiful, because they rely very heavily on iconography for everything. And while it looks great on the table, it also means unless this is a game you're playing regularly, which, let's face it, most of us play games a couple times and then we'll pull it back out like 8 months later and play it a couple times, the clearer rules can be and the clearer definitions of items can be, the more likely I am to pull this game out and play it again in a month or so, because I know I don't have to relearn the rules and relearn what every single icon stands for. This has an entire back cover of icons, and it doesn't cover everything that's in the game. And the problem with that is that some of these, like the travel ones, this is beautiful. It's got a first-person standpoint of the horse pulling the carriage as if you're sitting in the carriage itself and you're about to go into the dark woods. There's another version of it where you're taking a shortcut that requires three lanterns. And it has a little icon on it that tells you that it takes lanterns. And the art is beautiful on it. But it's about the only card that has any kind of iconography or text on the back of it to indicate what it is besides pictures. So like the deeds and the hero cards and all of these have just really cool art on the back of them, but nothing to really give you a better idea of what it is you're supposed to do. So like if you pull a hero card and it has like seven icons on it and you don't recognize one, you got to pull out the book again and look it up and see what it is that they want or what they give you. That slowed my gameplay enough that it started to get annoying for me. And it's little things like just, there's nothing wrong with having text on the back of a card that tells you what that stack of cards is. It's just, it may not be as aesthetically pleasing, but it makes the game flow a little better. So that's, it's kind of a minor quibble, but at the same time, it's a major impact on learning a new game in particular. Stuff like this really makes it difficult to bring somebody to a new table and be like, oh yeah, the one that says deeds is the deeds, versus, oh, it's the one with the book with the ribbon, but not the one that has the beer stein in front of it. Those are the hero cards. And the heroes are really more travelers than they are heroes. They're... anyway, I like the game. I think it's a beautifully designed and illustrated game, but the design and illustration seem to get in the way of ease of learning and playing the game. It's kind of a weird quibble for me, because 90% of what I look at when it comes to board games in particular, I have a much looser sliding scale for role-playing games. I'm not entirely sure why. It might just be the cost comparison. But when it comes to board games, it's already a little bit of a chore to bring them to the table at times, and especially if it's something that I feel like I should know, and I pull it out and I find myself checking the rule book every 35 seconds, it makes me more reluctant to pull it out and play it over and over again and truly experience it. When I was playing Merchants of the Dark Road, I got it out, I learned it, I played a couple games of it in the solo mode, and then planned to dive into the adventure mode, and just never got to it because I had other things come up. So I pulled it out maybe a month, month and a half later, and had to reacquaint myself with what all of the different cards indicated and what the dice did, because they were just obtuse enough that I had a hard time diving back into the world of Lumi and Merchants of the Dark Road. And it was a little disappointing for me, because I do really like the game. It's more of a puzzle than an adventure. I like the world it takes place in, better than I do the game itself. Like, if Merchants of the Dark Road released in a role-playing game or a setting book or something, I'd be all over it. I'd buy it in a heartbeat because the world it's created, and I like the merchant end of things as well. It just doesn't come through thematically as much as I would like it to. So in the game, you have piles of lovely dice. Lovely, lovely dice that you hardly ever get to roll. It's mostly dice placement. So in your turn, you have three dice on your wagon that all slot into a certain spot. And they have different values depending on which side of the dice. And there's like one through four plus a blank side that's also sort of the five. And there's a icon that's a full star, but there's also a hollow star, and those mean two different things for the purpose of like crafting, but not for the purpose of movement. So it's these dice are doing a lot of work when you're playing the game, considering they don't do a lot. They move about an inch and a half up each time. But on the board, there are a selection of different things that can happen. You can use your far right one, and if you move that one up, you get to adjust the market wheel, and you get a couple coins. And then once it moves up, then it tells you how many spaces you can move on the board around town to do different things. If you pick the middle one, you can pull a illuminated die down and get a lantern. One of the other ones lets you craft something based off of what's on the die itself, and you can actually craft an item, or you can upgrade an item if you've changed the little slot on there. So it's a tidy little puzzle thing. Each turn you decide which dice you're going to send up to the action area of the board, and then you use those dice to both create, craft, or get something, and to move. Once you've done that, you move around the market. And this was probably the weakest point for me in this game. So you have five spaces that you can move to around this town, and each one is in between two different locations in town, as well as four rotating locations that change depending on the game you're playing. But you can't activate everything unless you have illuminated dice and are using them for a very specific way. And the illuminated dice are like orange ones. They're a little more powerful, but you also very rarely get them compared to your night dice that you're using. So there's the Great Bazaar, and the Great Bazaar is kind of neat. It has a rondelle on it with there's two ones, a two, three, four, five, and then there's a goods placard that you put over the top of it that's magnetized so it stays in place, which is very luxe, but also feels a little unnecessary because this doesn't really get a ton of use, but it's neat. It's very satisfying to clack the Great Bazaar down and open it up. And then you have some manipulation there where you can take the different dice that represent the goods that you can carry, and you can move them around. You can also move the rondel itself around, making like armor go from a 4 in value to a 3 in value so that you can buy it cheaper. So there's a little bit of puzzliness to the Great Bazaar that's kind of neat. It lets you, it's probably my favorite space on the town board, honestly. It has a little bit more manipulation to it. It makes it feel like you're a little more in control of what you're doing. You can move different dice to different slots, and then if you buy two of them, you get the second one for free. And so it makes it really logistically satisfying to move some dice over, pick up a couple of things that you need, and at the same time balance how much you can actually fit on your wagon. Because if you pick up two things of armor, your wagon's pretty stuffed full with armor now, and you don't really have room for a wand or a book in there. And the system's really clever. That part is fun, because you're always looking for a different combination of stuff and goods and value, because there's a couple ways to get rid of your goods. You can take them to other towns and deliver them as part of a charter. You can sell them to the heroes that are in the tavern, and depending on what the value at the Great Bazaar is, that affects how much money you get when you're trading them in that respect. So there's a little bit of that element that I think in multiplayer would be really fun too, because you can see what other people are working on, and you can be like, oh, okay, so if I twist this way, it'll adjust how much they get paid for the thing that they've got on their wagon. In the top center is sort of the town hall area, and that's where you get commissions. And they're the ones that tell you, like, oh, Knight Poem wants a gun, a piece of armor, and a wand. And once you have those three, or even if you only have one or two of them, you can deliver them to Knight Poem and make some money or prestige, depending on what it is you're taking and where you're going. It's kind of boring. You literally just move there, pick one, and your turn's done. A lot of your turns in this feel really off kilter. And, like, there's some turns where you go, boop, done. And there's other turns where you go on entire journeys and adventures, and you get to read thematic stuff, and then your turn's done. And each game, it's basically 13 rounds, which goes pretty quick when you're playing solo in particular. And there are definitely certain turns where you feel really uneven, as if you've wasted time on that turn, considering how precious a commodity a turn is. And there's positives and negatives to that. There's definitely that, like, aspect of pressure to make each turn count that I really appreciate. I like the idea that you could go get a commission, but you've got a commission, so why waste an entire turn picking up one when you could go to the dark market and pick up something there for whatever reason. So there's definitely a kind of a neat balancing element there. It's got a little bit of a puzzliness to it, but at the same time, it's sort of uneven. I could see playing multiplayer that there would definitely be certain turns where you're like, oh, I wasted my turn watching what somebody else does. The dark market itself is kind of similar to the Grand Bazaar, except it's more basic and it's not as fun. It has a little circle that the token moves around on, and depending on where the token is, you can get something from it, and you can pay to move the token extra spaces, but it's sort of just a less elegant market than the Grand Bazaar. It never feels, like, sketchy or mysterious, or like there's any, like, real chance of something really exciting there. I think it would have been better served if it had had, like, a little deck of cards that you pulled and you could get more unusual items, or the occasional tag-along or something interesting happen that's more thematic with a dark market, but it's fine. It's just another spot to go and pick up something. There's also deeds that kind of take place in the middle of the town that you can pick up, and those basically relate to things you do during the game that get you victory points. And they're worth picking up if you don't have anything better to do, but at the same time, they never really felt worth paying attention to in the solo game in particular. You can also go to the inn, and that's where there are heroes, which I think are kind of poorly named, honestly, because the heroes are mostly just traveling merchants, too. Like, they're literally like, oh, this guy likes wands and books. If you give him wands and books, he'll pay you for these wands and books. And then he'll join your wagon, and you can take him to Knight Poem and drop him off. they are not very heroic. They're literally hanging out in an inn, buying stuff, and then hitching a ride to a different town that they want to go to. So they really do feel more like traveling merchants, which works for this game. I just think it's weird that they made the choice to call them heroes. But the art on the heroes are all really fantastic. I like the art on them. I like the characteristics of everybody in it. But they don't feel like heroes, but I do like the idea of showing up to the inn and you selling your stuff to other little traveling merchants and one of them hitching a ride to Curse Cairn or something like that. Beyond that, there are 4 different token placards that you can swap out depending on what you want to play or what you draw, and they kind of change the theme of the game. There's like a lantern maker and places where you can pick up artifacts or enhance and forge your items from the standard side to the shiny golden side that gets you extra points or money. So basically you spend a good chunk of your game traveling between these 5 spaces and activating a couple of different locations. There are some techniques you can use using the illuminated dice and whatnot where you can actually like have a big turn and activate both things on either side plus the little token in the middle. And those turns, it's kind of exciting and it's fun and it's kind of what you wish the game was the rest of the time. But it doesn't happen often. I think one of my turns, I only got to do it once or twice, and it felt really fun when I did that, but it makes the more mundane, oh, I'm going to the dark market and getting a wand, less exciting when you're playing that one. And that brings us to when we're actually traveling out of the town and into the little outskirt areas in the darkness of the dark road. And this is the part of the game that I wish the whole game was. This is why I wish they had like a role-playing game world, or that this was more of a Ameritrash adventure game instead of a worker placement rondel type thing, because the traveling's really fun. You choose who you're bringing with you. You declare where you're going. So the outer rim area is divided into like 4 different locations. Each of them has 2 different little towns. There's also some ruins you can explore. Like, immediately just saying that, it sounds like more fun, doesn't it? But you declare where you're headed, and the other players can choose to join you and make a convoy of wagons traveling safer together into the darkness. And I think that aspect is great. Like, even if you've taken your turn or you don't necessarily have anything that you want to do there, you can go on this adventure with them anyway and do something with it. Like, I could see myself as in the multiplayer game going whenever anybody else traveled, because it's easily my favorite part of the game, but in the solo mode it gets kind of underutilized unless you're doing it yourself every time. Then you decide what path you're taking. You can take the dark road, or you can burn 3 lanterns and take a light road. And then depending on what you do there, you pull cards, and it has different events that happen depending on where you land and what you're doing. So like, for instance, one of the light roads is the bard's grave. Will you leave something behind to honor the famous bard, or rescue a valuable that would otherwise be lost to the snow? And then you have a certain number of travel dice that you use. They're these sparkly little iridescent 6-sided die that you roll, and depending on like what animal companion you bring with you and how many other people are traveling with you, you have a certain number of dice you roll. And then along the bottom, there are different things that happen depending on what number you roll on your dice. So like, if you rolled a 6 for the bard's grave, you would get a So if you rolled a 6, you'd get a blazing quartz from the bard's grave. If you rolled a 2, 3, or 4, you would return 1 good of your choice to the supply. So there are positives and negatives depending on what you roll. And as the leader, you get to pick, then the next person picks which dice they get from the travel. And it can be positives and negatives. You can lose coins, or you could pick up an enhanced loot. And by loot, I mean the loot that you play, not loot, but still, it's loot. But it's an interesting system. I like the idea of this. I will say that the dark and light roads don't necessarily correspond in any particular way. Like, I assumed that if I'm spending lanterns, the lighter path would get me more benefits. And sometimes it does, but, like, some of the dark roads, I got better stuff or less negatives than taking the light path and spending three lanterns to go on it. So I'm not exactly sure what the difference is there, but I do like the thematic little sentences and the art that they throw on these. Like, this one's guard duty, and it's just got like this cool shot of these three guards walking past a cool, quirky little workshop. And it says, a remote laboratory is worried about brigands. They are looking for temporary guards to oversee an important delivery. So you stop at a laboratory in the dark and guard their shop that night before you travel on, and in return you can get some goods or some armor, or you could spend a couple of coins dicing with the laboratory assistant or something. They're a little vague on some of it, but as someone who likes to play solo RPGs and journaling games and that kind of thing, this... it's like an adventure seed for what I wish the rest of the game was, as far as being a merchant on the dark road. So once you finish your path to whatever town you're going to, then you visit the town that you were headed to, and whoever comes along with you can go to it or the neighboring towns. You can sell your stuff, you can drop off heroes, you get victory points and coins and whatnot. You can deliver full commissions, and then after you're done at the villages, you travel back to the town, and you get a fortune based off of which road you chose. And the fortunes are sort of upgrades that you can apply to your wagon. Instead of crafting an item, you craft an upgraded item, or you have a like a horseshoe that you can use to move extra spaces with your wagon, and just like fun little like touches that you can kind of use to refine your playstyle. And then you're back to town. You can also go to the ruins, and there's a cool little artifact die that you roll that gives you different things. Once again, it's more icons you have to look up every time you roll, because you don't get to go very often. I wish you did, because I think the idea of this traveling the dark road and stopping in these little villages and guarding a laboratory at night and these little like roadside events are really charming and fun, and like kind of makes me want to just take that part of the board, because it's like this puzzly board that you put together, and figure out a solo game to play with that that's far more like solo RPG journaling or something. And then that's the game. You're making coins, you're making prestige points, but the neat thing about it is the scoring on it. You can't just focus on making money, or you can't just focus on prestige, because the winner of the game is who has the highest of their lowest stat. So if you've got prestige up the wazoo, but you've only got a couple of coins, your end of game scoring is going to be based off of those coins and not your prestige. And that's really thematic and cool. I like the balancing act there. I like that as a merchant, you've got to balance your reputation as well as how much money you're making. I think that works really nicely. And I think it's a neat scoring thing that sort of falls flat in the solo mode, because you're playing against an AI that has a card deck that does very specific things every time. So there's not as much of that interplay with other players and what they're shooting for and how much prestige they're getting. But it is kind of neat. I do like the end of game scoring quite a bit. There are little victory points that you can get based off of different things you do that affect it. And then whoever has the highest of their lowest wins. In the solo version, you are just playing against the AI. I do like that you can use the AI during multiplayer games as well, because it does do some interesting things. If nothing else, it occasionally means an extra jaunt off into the darkness to visit little villages and have adventures, so I appreciated that in and of itself. And I do like some of the adventure stuff on here. Like, it's got, like, a little bit of a story to it, and then it does have changes to the setup or different objectives, and then it has, like, a little bit of a lead-in into the next game you play. And I definitely think that adds quite a bit to the solo aspect. It's a little more theme, a little more flavor dipped into this game that I really appreciate as the solo mode goes along. I found just the straight solo adventure overview to be pretty dry, unless you were going out on a travel. But once you add in the little adventures in the booklet, it does boost the enjoyment. But I guess that's Merchants of the Dark Road. I would certainly recommend it, especially if you like thematic worker placement, pickup and delivery, moving around a board, doing puzzly stuff type games, because it does have that with a nice theme sort of slotted next door. It's beautiful. It's a lovely looking game, especially if you can find the deluxe version. But I would definitely, this is one of those games where I would probably have liked to have played it at a convention first or over at a buddy's house and seen what I thought of it before I bought it exclusively for solo play. I definitely think that it's worth keeping if you've got a game group that loves this type of game. You can also play solo occasionally. But overall, I think it's a great game. It's just not necessarily for me. I'll probably keep it because it's fun and it's cool looking. But I may see if I can come up with some sort of fun little, like, RPG-themed hack for it, because it's... it seems like a silly nitpick to say that it's a little too board gamey, but this board game is a little too board gamey for me. Which is why I play RPGs most of the time, I guess. But anyway, that was Merchants of the Dark Road from Elf Creek Games. It does look like it's available on their website. I'll throw a link to their website on Amazon. If you pick it up through the Amazon link that I'll throw on here, you'll kick back a little bit to us and still pay the same price and kind of help the podcast keep going. You can also find it used on Noble Knight and a few other places. So I'll throw a whole pile of links below if you want to check it out. I think it's worth looking at, if only just to see if you like the art style in it and think that the gameplay would be appealing to you. I really do think that it's a solid game that's let down a little bit by its over-reliance on looking good. And I have a really hard time in my soul complaining about something looking good to the detriment of the play style, because let's face it, like, 2/3 of my books, I just read them because I like how they look and I'll never play the game. But still, there has to be some thought put into it, I guess. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. As always, if you'd like to support the channel, you can follow us on Patreon or hit like and subscribe and 5-star us or whatever it is you'd like to do to say, hey, I listened to this and it's a thing that exists. It's nice to be back. I have some fun stuff coming up. And as always, I usually have something live on Kickstarter. Attack from Space is live right now, where you can play aliens versus knights in a co-op competitive crazy collage of a game. You can also find links below in the description to my DriveThruRPG page, where you can pick up 3D6 or Tabletops and Tentacles or pretty much everything else I do. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. I'm Chris, and remember, we all die alone.